Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. And you can follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGann. Make sure you follow us there on Twitter, GoForItGann. Today, big show, as always, expected to be joined by the great 11-time Pro Bowler, Willie Roaf. We're going to get Willie Roaf's thoughts on this whole James Harrison situation. Also, Baltimore Ravens second-round draft pick, Torrey Smith, is going to be stopping on by. We're going to talk to Torrey about how he's preparing for the upcoming season. And we got to ask him a little bit about that Steelers-Ravens rivalry, though he has not been a part of it yet, but we're going to ask him about it. And also, Fabian Washington, free agent cornerback, played for the Baltimore Ravens last year. He's going to be stopping on by, and we're going to talk to him about the Ravens-Steelers rivalry and what's up with him in this offseason. And also, from the movie Transformers 3, Mr. Lester Spate will be in the building. Many remember Lester as being Terry Tate, the office linebacker. But Lester's going to stop on by. We're going to talk to Lester. Big show, lots of fun, talk sports, have fun doing it, as always. Jeremy?
How's it doing, man? It's a hot summer day, and we're locked out. And we're locked out in two sports, excuse me, you know. You got to remember here. So it's, but we got baseball, and but we got a lot of lockout and a lot of talk, and hopefully a deal soon.
Well, it looks like a deal is in place and it should be coming anytime soon now. I mean, it should be coming soon. I expect a deal. And as I've been saying throughout this whole process, I said it before, I'll say it again. Games will not be missed, everybody. Don't panic. Don't be upset. Don't get your underwear in a bunch. Games will not be missed. So, yeah, I don't know why people ever even thought that or even put that in their minds. In their mind. I mean, come on. Games will not be missed. These people aren't stupid. They're not stupid.
No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we've been talking a lot about this, in the off season. There's no way the NFL can afford to have these games be lost. This amount of money, it comes by once in a lifetime, and I mean they're the franchise sport to be, and so I think everybody recognizes that. You certainly want to be the NFL today.
Definitely, I mean, you definitely want to be the NFL. If there's any sport that you want to be, it's the National Football League, hands down. And, again, they're going to get this thing straightened out. And everything gets straightened out in the 11th hour, the last hour. Everything gets straightened out at that point. Everything gets straightened out. People are not going to do stuff unless they have to do it. I'm not going to go to work unless I have to do it. I mean, I'm not going to cut my lawn unless I have to do it. And I'm not going to mess up my money unless I have to do it, and I'll never have to do that. And so these NFL players, these NFL owners are not going to mess up their money, and they're not going to mess with what they have. This is a great product, and they want to keep it going. They're not going to mess with that. You don't mess with success. If it ain't broke, you don't try to fix it. And I think that's what the owners are trying to do on some level. But at the same time, I mean, you got to come to some kind of resolution, and it's looking like they're coming to that resolution. And that's a good thing. Football will be back, and that's a good thing. We all love football here.
I mean, we certainly. I couldn't agree more. I don't think we need to be without football. So, I mean, we look at that and we sit there and we say, you know, what would be, can you imagine, you know, an off season of baseball, you get into August and then September and there be no football. And ultimately then no basketball either, which, I mean, if there's a sport that's in bigger jeopardy, it certainly is that. You know, but the interesting thing, Paul, all the time is getting to see, you know, how the players react, you know, to lately, not just the lockout, but being locked out and seeing how some of these players are, you know, you see Peyton Manning and Drew Brees's, and they're coming out and they're certainly being very provocative, if you will, with their comments about the financial state of the league versus the players. And then, of course, this week, James Harrison came out and pretty much, you know, I guess some would say he wrote a love letter to a fine commissioner.
Well, if you want to call that love, that's a lot of love there in that particular letter. I mean, the guy called the man the devil, a crook, and he said if he saw him on the side of the road, he would not even bother to piss on him. He wouldn't even drop his pants to piss on the guy. That's some hate there. I mean, and you know what it comes down to? Roger Goodell's messing with James Harrison's money. You start messing with people's money, people do some crazy things. And James Harrison, he said some crazy things. And, you know, I mean.
Well, Paul, you know what, Paul? I mean, I think, first of all, was it really crazy? I mean, the context, they say may have been taken, you know, a little bit out. The word hate, I think, you know, is certainly, if you are an educated person in this society, you steer away from the word hate because it can have a very detrimental effect on the message you're trying to impart. But I also say, is there anything wrong with James Harrison or with any player or with any person publicly saying that they have a large disdain? Or I'm not going to ever say it's appropriate to use the word hate. But even to say that if he saw him on the side of the street, that he wouldn't piss on him. Hey, listen, Paul, Goodell has really done himself no favors during this lockout. He has yet once to come out and really say that the players are deserving of monies. He has, I think, wrongly tried to portray the players almost, you know, in a way as, you know, the problem with the league, which I think they're far from.
So that's good enough for me to, if I saw you on the side of the road on fire, not to piss on you, to save your life.
Paul, if you say, listen, because of, let's say you use me and you as an example, our interactions between the two of us, if it was your opinion that the way I treated you and things I publicly said about you or your abilities or what you do or how you perform them, or most importantly, how you're compensated, which Goodell has done. I mean, Goodell, as I said, Paul, he has, you know, basically tried to come out day in and day out and make the media believe that the players are ridiculously overcompensated.
Does that make you a devil? Does that make you a crook?
Sure.
And that makes you on some level, worthy to die if you're on fire on the side of the road and all you could do to save him was to piss on him? That makes him that? I mean, come on. I understand he's messed with his money, but, I mean, you know.
But you got to be smart, Paul. You wouldn't say that to your boss.
You wouldn't say that to your boss. You wouldn't say that about your boss
on some level.
But
I'm going to say this. I don't know what I'm going to say to my boss. I've never been put in the position that James Harrison was put in, and I want to make that clear. I mean, neither have you. And that's why I say I think that one of the biggest problems for Goodell with a lot of these players, and one of the things I did read, and I do believe is very, very true, I think a lot of players were very, very happy with James Harrison. I think that for the commissioner of the league to come out and say some of the things that he has been saying in regards to players' salaries and the finances of the league, especially when the league has really yet to disclose publicly their financials, which the players have been calling for since day one of the lockout. I mean, let's be real, Paul. I think it's without basis. It's without merit. And also, you know, one of the things, the bigger pieces of what I appreciate of what James Harrison said, and I believe it's very true, is the fact, as he said, if a lot of these injuries were happening to black quarterbacks or black players, there wouldn't be the penalties. I look at a guy like James Harrison. I look at guys like Terrell Owens. I look at guys like Chad Ochocinco, and I say constantly, you know, they off the field. These guys never get into trouble, but for whatever reason, the NFL, because it does not want that type of a player in their league, and this is certainly not a color issue to me. This is very much more about a control issue. But they do not want outspoken people in their league. They absolutely positively, and Goodell, most importantly, has walked into this league and with a total iron fist, with a dictator iron fist, he has banished people, which that was never, I believe, the role of a commissioner, and especially the role of an athlete in a sport. Really, they're there if they can play or they can't play, not because they want to. If they can dance after a touchdown or after a catch, I don't see how that should take away from their ability to play sports because one man believes it's detrimental to the game. When the fans don't believe it, let the fans do the speaking. Let you and I do the speaking, Paul, as viewers and fans and essentially, you know, the supply chain, if you will, of professional sports. We'll speak with our dollars. If we don't like the way professional athletes carry themselves, we won't go. Period.
Well, let's bring in 11-time Pro Bowler and the great Willie Rofe. Let's get his thoughts on everything. Willie.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, I agree with you to a certain point, but if you're on the Jeremy, and I've got, let's say Michael Vick for instance, I've got a guy, $100 million contract or so much money guaranteed in the guy, and then he ends up getting in some off the field trouble, and next thing you know, it's bad for public relations. A guy has a chance to go to jail, and then I'm trying to recoup money. Then that's a problem for me and for my organization. Is that correct?
Well, I got to stop you because I said at the outset of this, that's not what I'm speaking about. I'm speaking about guys like Terrell Owens, guys like Chad Ochocinco, guys like James Harrison, guys who are just purely outspoken, perhaps with their words or their antics on the field. But off the field, and I'll look at a guy like Terrell Owens, I'll look at a guy like Chad Ochocinco and say, what Goodell has done to them? You know, and James Harrison, the monetary fines, and he's right. One of the things he talks about is the fact is the mindset that they put on last year about these dollar value fines hitting players, causing them to hit up higher will increase concussions, not decrease them, because you're not going to be able to hit the right way. I'm not speaking about guys like Michael Vick or guys like Ben Roethlisberger, who I believe they deserve harsher treatment. I don't think Michael Vick should be playing in the NFL. I mean,
I think Michael Vick should be playing in the NFL now. He served his time. But what I'm saying is, so what happened with Terrell Owens? I mean, he's outspoken.
What happens is he gets fined. He and Chad Ochocinco, they lose money strictly because one man says, I don't like you. You are more important. Where you're trying to be more important than the whole. And to me, I think that's laughable. I think the fans enjoy it. I think that's what they come to see. And most of all, if they think if any fan in any sport or any consumer in any economic area doesn't like what they're seeing or what the product has, they speak with their dollar. They will find another venue. And so I think what Goodell does by finding these players and that entrainment process, it's a negative. It makes these players believe that, you know, that in
well,
part,
I agree with you to a certain point, but I don't agree with. I mean, I understand that, but in retrospect too, James Harrison is a Pro Bowler, the outstanding player in this league. I mean, the commissioner has a job, and he is the commissioner, so there has to be a level of respect there. Even if you're thinking that stuff, you just can't go out there and bash the commissioner and say you wouldn't do some of the stuff he said in that article. You know, you can't do it. You're a grown man, and you have to be mature about the business you play and what you're doing for a living before you make statements like that about the man who runs your league. I mean, I agree with you, what you're saying, but you just can't call out the man and just blatantly disrespect the commissioner of the league. I mean, I mean, most of my career was with Paul Tagliabue, and Paul Tagliabue had a more laid-back demeanor. He had a very good relationship with Gene Upshaw. So when they brought in Roger Goodell, they brought him in and cracked the whip, if you want to say, with some of the stuff that was going on, especially some of the off the field antics. So that's what they brought him in for. Now, I think in some aspects he has gone over the line, but he is still the commissioner of the football league, and you still have to respect his position. And you know, and at the end of the day, I think he has the league's and the players' best interests at heart. He just conducts it in a way that rubs some players the wrong way.
And I agree. I mean, you cannot call out your boss like that. You just can't do it. I mean, you can't say that. If you saw your boss on the side of the road on fire, you wouldn't even piss on him. You can't call him a devil. You can't call him a crook. You just can't do it. You can't do it at all. And Roger Goodell, at the end of the day, has a job to do. And he has to protect the interests of the league publicly and in all aspects of the league. He has to protect it. That's what he has to do.
He has to protect it. I do say some of the stuff, you know, you can say is a little nitpicky, but like you said, he is your boss. So you have to respect his authority and respect the job he's doing.
Let me ask you this, though. I mean, one of my biggest problems with Goodell throughout this lockout has been the fact that I think it's very disrespectful in all of this that he has not tried to bridge the gap and say, stand in the middle as the commissioner and say that the players here, there is a certain level of what they're doing that is right. The fact that they risk their lives, you know, for this sport, that they are the product of the NFL. Instead, that he has pretty much said and stood with the owners and said, well, I mean, the players are overpaid. They complain too much. He has really bad-mouthed and very articulately, unlike a James Harrison, all the players.
But hold on, he represents the owners. That's his job. He is supposed to side with the owners. That's what he's supposed to do.
But you don't hear the owners doing that.
But that's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to side with the owners. That's his job. That's what he has to do.
He has to represent the owners, but you know, I mean, it's, you know what? It's a fine line, and I'm friends with Tony Richardson, and you know, when all the stuff with the lockout's been going on, I mean, it's been guys that were gonna maybe work with the commissioner or wanna side with him and stuff, and it's a touchy situation, man, because when you start negotiating and dealing with that kind of money and what the owners and players are trying to do, you're just trying to come to an agreement now, and then you have a new guy in place working with the players that you're trying to get to know also, and you don't have that security of having Upshaw there anymore, who, you know, Upshaw, you know, did a lot of good things for the league, but a lot of players said he was too much in the pockets of the owners. You know, that's what people, a lot of guys say about Gene Upshaw. So, you know, like I said, I say the commissioner's in a tough situation. You know, as long as we have football this year and they get a deal done, I think everything is forgotten and forgiven, maybe over time. But like you said, the commissioner's got off to a rough start. He has more of a dry personality. You know, I would say it has something to do with more of the personality and the players not thinking they can relate to him and he relates to them. Whereas Tagliabue, kind of everybody felt like Tagliabue was like their father, or Tagliabue was just a good old guy, more laid back. Where I think some guys probably feel a little threatened by Goodell.
Now, do you think Harrison's going to get suspended or fined for this?
I don't think he'll get suspended. I don't know if he'll get fined. I just think the statements, you're holding the guns and all that. I mean, he can say that was a portion of the interview and whatever, but, you know, when you make statements like that on the record and you pose for those pictures, I mean, he also said that it was some family pictures and stuff he took also, but that's not what they want. They want controversy. And them hyping up that magazine and the journal and his comments is going to sell those magazines, and that's the bottom line. It's about selling magazines. So, I mean, you know, it's just those doubt. It won't affect him as much now as it will when he's retired. And what if he wants to do stuff with football or you know, has stuff he wants to do. I mean, that's when it'll affect him more. It won't affect him as much while he's playing, more so when he's retired and out of the league.
Well, Willie, let me ask you something. What in your experience in being around as many players as you've been around, what brings a guy to say, in an article or in these interviews, some of these interviews throughout time, what brings a guy to not think about when they're saying things like that? I mean, the ripple effect. Like for James Harrison, why was there no, stop mechanism saying, maybe I shouldn't cross that line, or maybe I just crossed the line and I'm going to tell the reporter, you know what, I don't want that to get out?
Okay, well, obviously it's some ego involved. Some attitude. He's upset about what happened with the fines and for some of those hits last year and some of the stuff that went on. But, you know, you can't step over bounds and get to the point where you think you can just say and do whatever the hell you want to do when you're playing the game and when you're talking about the guy running the game. I mean, I just think there's a line drawn that I don't think James Harrison would have done that in the NFL in 1980. I can tell you that. So, I mean, it's a different day and age. The guys are making a lot of money, and I guess they feel like they can do what they want and do and say what they want to do. But they have to understand that a line still has to be drawn.
Talking to Willie Rolfe, 11-time Pro Bowler. And Willie, have you ever been around a situation like that where a player has kind of mouthed off about his teammates
to the
media?
Not really to the media. I mean, you know that stuff happens in the locker room. The guys don't get – everybody
right.
Didn't get along. But, when I came in the league, it was more with the Saints in 93, it was more – if you had an issue, you dealt with it, in the locker room, or the guys dealt with it themselves. But, you weren't going to go to the media and bad talk, your teammate or your coach. That just wasn't happening. Unless a guy knew he was on his way out or got traded, then they might come back and make some statements about the team. But when they were part of that team, you just weren't going to do those types of things.
Do you think it's a matter of guys, with the lockout going on, guys just having – too much time on their hands? You see a lot of guys getting in trouble on Twitter saying some things. Is it just guys really just have too much time on their hands at this point?
Well, I think it's guys have too much time on their hands. I think it's just the media network now. The Twitter and all this stuff is blown out of proportion. And I also think it's a lot more ego with the guys because they're making, guys making $10 million a year. I mean, they pretty much can think they can say and do what they want to do because they're making a lot of money now, too. I mean, it's not like it's not like the old NFL when a guy played football and then he had to go work a second job. I mean, so you weren't gonna keep those comments to yourself when you were relying on going back and playing football for a living. So I just think it's just guys are making a lot more money and have a lot more freedom, and everything is expressed whether good or bad in the media. And some people think that all attention is good attention in the media.
I mean, is this, though, Willie, one of the things I often wonder is this, though, the trap of being a professional athlete or quote-unquote entertainer, especially in the years up to the 2000s, where they're building you up, basically, to combust and to say things that will get you into trouble so they can watch you crumble?
Yeah, they'll watch you crumble, and then now everything that happens with James Harrison all year is going to be critiqued under the microscope, and guys can't lead with the crown and need to tackle properly anyway, and then you're not going to be leading with the head. But James Harrison already was known for saying statements and the fines and everything last year, and him doing that right before the season just put some microscope more on him, and everybody's going to watch everything he does. It's just putting more pressure on yourself. So, I mean, if you don't mind the pressure, then I guess it's okay to make the statements.
I want to switch. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, I mean, I wonder, the thing I always see lately is, like Paul was saying, is now it's Twitter, now it's Facebook, and now, with the Teocho show, it's almost as if, and you have mentioned the money part of all this, these players now in all the sports. I mean, the money is so great that they are becoming like mini. It's like mini Hollywood, and long has society known that in Hollywood they're waiting for you to fail. They're waiting for the drug addiction. They're waiting for the alcohol. They're waiting for the embarrassing moment so you can be ridiculed and be followed. And it's like they're now turning to a broader, you know, view and to see how many people, you know, can we destroy with money and with the philosophy that you're bigger. Somehow James Harrison is bigger than society strictly because he's a Pro Bowl linebacker and, a Super Bowl champion.
I agree with that, but like I said, it's still – has to be some integrity, and it still has to be a respect factor for the, you know, the owners and the management that run the league. I mean, and like I said, it might not affect him as much now, but he's going to be under a microscope. And you know, let's say he does put together four or five more real good years, and you know, whatever gets Hall of Fame potential, you know, down the road, you know, it could affect him at that point also. So you just need to watch your comments, and you know, I'm not saying you have to be a company man, but you just have to know that there are guidelines and you know, stuff that's already known without us having to even talk about it.
And Willie, switching gears now, Tiki Barber, he's coming back out of the league for 4 years, a 36-year-old running back. Do you think Tiki's comeback will be successful? The odds are against it.
The odds are against it, but you know what? I think 4 years off and as good a shape as Tiki was in when he played for a third down role player back, I think he'll have success. I mean, I don't think he's going to be able to carry the load like he did with the Giants. Most of his career and running about 20 sometimes a game, but I think in you know, as far as the third down back and the back coming off and giving you some quality minutes, especially if his body can hold up to not have playing all the time and can recover, I think he can do a good job. Now I don't know how good it's going to be for him to play where it gets real cold and when that body stiffens up. If he was in a warmer market, I think that would help him too. But I think Tiki still can play. I think he still can give you a couple years, and I think he can be productive for a team. Like I said, he's not going to be carrying the ball 20, 25 times a game, but we'll see what happens. I mean, he could have kept playing when he retired. So, he had so much stuff going on outside of football with the TV, with the morning show, and then with the NFL, the Fox, the deal he had with NBC.
Right.
I think that's part of the reason he retired.
And you look at it, Tiki was a guy who kind of ran his mouth a little bit during his time as an analyst and even when he was a player. Do you think guys will welcome him back in the NFL locker room?
Yeah, they'll welcome him back as long as he comes in with a good attitude and is humble and goes out there and works hard. Yeah, they'll welcome anybody back. I think the experience that Tiki had to go through since he retired and the situation that happened to him has brought him down to earth, and now he's hungry, and you know, he had lost that love for the game, and I watched the interview on Real Sports. He said he got it back, and you know, I want to see him be successful. I mean, he's the guy closer to him. You know, was playing most of the same time I was playing, so I just want to see him be successful, and hopefully he can figure things out. You know, if this football doesn't work out, he can figure some other things out. But you know, it's a tough situation when you've been married a long time, and you know, your marriage hasn't been right for a while, but you really can't come out in the media and say it because you have a reputation to uphold. And you know, the way he handled that probably wasn't the best way to handle it at the time, and it hurt him.
Right, definitely. Did you ever have that itch to return?
Pardon me?
Did you ever have that itch to return after you retired from football?
You know, I did have an itch to return, and it's funny. I was talking to – I'm in Kansas City – and I was talking to Eddie Kennison in 2007 when they won the Super Bowl. My agent had contacted me about the Giants, maybe wanting me to come back and out of retirement. And, you know, I had an itch to return, but, you know, the way I left Kansas City and I wasn't feeling good, you know, if I didn't come back and play for Kansas City and, you know, after I retired, you know, and they own my rights, then, at the end of the day, you know, I left because it was time for me to go. So I thought about coming back, but I knew it, when I left it was you know, when I thought about it, it was better for me to just stay retired.
Well, you know, Willie, when you look at the transition, like especially for a guy like you, a career like offensive lineman. When you say it was mainly, was it the fact of not just the injuries, but the fact that you were not going to it was it health for you rather than, you know, the money? Because you had said before you were lucky that you, when during your playing days, you didn't necessarily need the money. So for you, it was I'm not going to be in a wheelchair the rest of my life.
Yeah, I wasn't going to be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, the as soon as, right after I retired, we did, the stock market did drop, and guys had to, you know, cut back on spending and stuff. So I'm not going to say I couldn't have used making the money, but I wasn't going to risk going out there and, you know, sitting on the bench or, you know, trying to make it through a season and not being the player I had been. And, you know, especially, you know, I was hurt some the year before, and, you know, to make the money, I just wasn't going to risk it. And, you know, I just wanted to leave on a good note. And when you leave, you know, I get a lot of respect in Kansas City, and people say a lot of good things about me. And, you know, they mess with me and say, Willie, you still want to play some football, we can use you and stuff like that. But, you know, I played good. I had four good, real good years playing in Kansas City, and like you said, I just wanted to walk away on a good note and not be limping off the field.
Well, Willie, enjoy your time in Kansas City, man. It was greatly appreciated. Always enjoy you stopping by, man. And when the season starts, or even before the season starts, we're going to have to get you back on to talk some more football. Take care of yourself.
You too.
Take care. Willie Rolfe, 11-time Pro Bowler. And it was good to get Willie's thoughts on that. I mean, Willie is a guy who has obviously played a lot of years in the league, and he has some great thoughts there. And hopefully James Harrison will take some of his advice into consideration in the future. Hopefully. I doubt it, but hopefully.
Thank you. I wasn't going to – I agree.
And I think you would hopefully you will take into account some of the things that Willie said as well. Your feelings about Roger Goodell. Your feelings about him. Hopefully you'll take those into consideration. Hopefully.
I think what Willie said ultimately down the line, I do understand, and I agree with what you're saying. He is the, you know, spokesman, if you will, for the owners. To me, I told you, Paul, my biggest issue, if you will, you know, with Goodell, is he walks into the league in a precarious situation, you know, the fact that basically being voted in and walking in, and the major issue was getting past this strike. And I always thought that, and I still believe, or the lockout and the strike, but I believe that they need Goodell and the owners, I thought, played this wrong. Instead of you know, bad mouthing, continually to bad mouth these players, continually to say that, you know, they're being paid too much, or that without though recognizing they have not disclosed, like the NBA, you know, who has come out and basically said, hey, we'll show you which teams are losing money and how bad the losses are. To say though their players are overpaid, without being able to demonstrate, you know, financially what that effect of that overpayment is, to me, it draws, you know, the comparison of what James Harrison is saying. that they're liars and they're cheaters. I mean, because they're not being – essentially what they're not being is they're not being truthful. They're not, in full disclosure, being able to say one thing and back it up with the context in which they say it. Instead, they go out and, you know, they're saying it and not proving it.
And that's a great point. You make up a great point about this lockup, but hopefully it is going to end very, 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 very soon. We're going to be joined shortly now by Torrey Smith, wide receiver for the Baltimore Ravens. And Torrey, the second-round draft pick of the Baltimore Ravens, we're going to bring Torrey in next. Stick around. Go for it. blogtalkradio.com/pgant. Like we said, the lockout has been going on. It's been a long time. It's almost over. It is almost over, and I just can't wait for it to be over. I mean, Jeremy, throughout this lockout, we've heard a lot of different things, and most important, we heard people saying that there may not be football this year. When you heard that kind of talk, you had to say to yourself, man, that's crazy talk.
Yeah, well, no, exactly. I think that's the predominant driver here, that we as fans and certainly, you know, the media, we're looking around at this and think, to me, if nothing else, that the NFL and the players and the lockout, you know, it's too fragmented, if you understand.
I hate to interrupt you, but we're now being joined by Baltimore Ravens wide receiver, Mr. Torrey Smith. Torrey, how are you?
Doing.
On the front.
Oh. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Doing well. Great to have you.
Yeah, appreciate that.
And Torrey, throughout your career at Maryland, you made big plays in the return game. What made you so effective in the return game?
I think the fact that, you know, as far as being a good kick returner, you got to be able to hit the hole straight up. There's not too much dancing involved, really. And, you know, just the whole mindset you got to have, and you really got to trust your blockers. And obviously you have a little bit of speed that helps. And I think that, you know, led to me being successful in college.
And, Torrey, you got a lot of speed to burn. I mean, speed is a big part of your game at Maryland, and you were very effective during your time at Maryland. After your junior year, when you put up the big numbers, over 1,000 yards receiving, 12 touchdowns, did you know at that point you were ready for the NFL?
For me, it was more so just going through the process. I graduated from school, and my coach was telling me, you know, even before the season, that, you know, if I keep developing how I was, you know, that I would have to make a decision at the end of the year. You know, I just kept working hard. You know, I didn't really pay attention to it much, and you know, just kind of calculate everything after the season and decide to go. I graduated from school, and we had a coaching change, and, you know, I thought it was just time.
And, Torrey, I look at the draft process, man, and that's a tough thing to go through. As a person, I'm looking at it. I mean, you go to these combines, you go to all these different places, you get interviewed left and right by all these different teams. I mean, how stressful was it for you leading up to the draft?
For me, it really wasn't stressful because I know so many players have been through the process, you know, so I knew what to expect. You know, there was nothing new, you know, and I was prepared. I took care of business both on and off the field, so I didn't have anything to worry about. And, you know, I stayed out of trouble, you know, all my life. So, I mean, it helped me out. And, you know, like I said, my coaches could vouch for me, and, you know, I had good film. So, I mean, I really wasn't stressing anything.
when you say though that there wasn't you know the stress, but you do mention the preparation, you know, walking in you know from the combines and having a coach instead. How much of it though was the mindset that you kind of recognized that your performance was going to put you in the NFL and not really worrying about where and the particulars, if you will?
Oh, I mean, like I said, heading into the process, I knew it was something that you can't control, you know, so my whole mindset was just take care of my business and everything that I control, which is my performance, the way I handle myself, you know, both on and off the field during that time and the way I train and prepare, you know, for the combine and leading up to draft day. So, I mean, I knew it was a possibility of me getting drafted to, you know, any of the 32 teams, and I knew it was a possibility of me not being drafted at all. You know, you just got to be a realist and understand the possibilities of what can happen and have a game plan, you know, for each scenario.
And, Torrey, on draft day, I mean, a lot of people expected you to go a little higher in the draft, but when you finally heard 58th pick, the Baltimore Ravens, select Torrey Smith, tell us how that felt.
Oh, I was excited. You know, I was watching the second round once I realized, you know, obviously I didn't go in the first. You know, I was sitting around just watching. I was like, man, I hope, you know, Baltimore finds a way to either trade up, you know, I'll fall to them. You know, that's really the place I wanted to play. You know, obviously I would have been honored to play, you know, on any team, you know, out there, but I really wanted to play for the Ravens. I understand, you know, what they expect out of their players. I know a bunch of guys up there. And obviously I've been in the area, so I know how the fans are and what they expect. And I just wanted to be a part of the organization. You know, they have great leadership. You know, they're always contenders. So in order to step into that situation as a rookie, you know, I was just lucky, and you know, it's kind of like a dream come true when it
happened. Right. And Torrey, that's a great story. That's a great thing, you being a part of the Baltimore Ravens. Being that you were from the Virginia area, were you a Redskins guy? Were you a Ravens guy? Where were you growing up?
I didn't like anyone really. I always had favorite players. My favorite player was Vic. You know, he was a Virginia guy, and I mean, everyone either liked the Redskins or the Cowboys, or, you know, their bandwagon is just like some random team, you know. But for me, obviously, you get a lot, you see it on television a lot, you know, the Ravens, the Redskins, the Cowboys, you know, all the big name teams, you know, because Virginia gets a little bit of everything.
So let me ask you, you know, now you're in, like everyone else, you're in day infinity here of the lockout. And as a rookie, how is it affecting, like, you the most, aside from the fact that, you know, financially, you're also in just waiting in queue?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's something I knew was a possibility happened with the lockout. And I ended up choosing Drew Rosenhaus as my agent. And the way he carried himself throughout the process was that he would make sure we're fine, you know, financially. If the lockout would have gone for a full year and there was no football, you know, he would take care of us, you know, and make sure we were fine. And then, I had that type of security and knowing, having the confidence that, you know, the owners and the players, you know, wouldn't miss the season. You know, it helped me make my decision. And, you know, I just feel confident about everything. And I know, you know, when things do get done, you know, I'll be fine.
We're talking to Torrey Smith, wide out for the Baltimore Ravens. And, Torrey, the rookie symposium, you were there. Herm Edwards was there, and he gave a great little speech. Talk about that.
It was a great speech. He basically talked to us about everything from financials to living your life both on and off the field. You know, talked about many different things from, you know, women to your whole social life in general. And, you know, it really sends a great message, and it's something that we'll definitely all take away from that event and remember, you know, because it was very powerful in the way, you know, he spoke to us. That he put it in a way that, you know, we would truly understand and that it'll force you to kind of remember his words.
And one thing he said is one of everything. One girlfriend, one car, one house, one of everything, one piece of jewelry. Are you going to take that into consideration?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, what he said, you know, makes a lot of sense. And that's kind of, you know, how I've been carrying myself anyways. You know, I got my first car, you know, it was a lockout, but we had, you know, endorsements and things. I was, you know, lucky to be in that situation. So, you know, I actually got my first car and, you know, a first little nice watch. And, you know, I had one girlfriend, so I can't really complain. And, you know, kind of everything he was saying was kind of speaking to me in a way, you know, that I was going to protect myself once I did get there.
How is it, you know, from being a college player now to being going through the draft, and now you are drafted, you're on a team. Have you started to see the effects of being now what's called an NFL player? You know, are people trying to call you and talk to you more and see how, you know, things are going? Do you, especially with the lockout, do you need a little bit here because I can help you, and then maybe you can help me later? Do you see that change starting to occur?
I think the biggest thing is definitely socially. You know, I tell people all the time, like, I've been in, you know, the College Park area for 3.5 years. You know, people rarely stop me or say anything to me. You know, and I get drafted one day, you know, I can't go anywhere without someone stopping me. So, you know, it's just crazy to know the difference between the professional level, especially in this area. You know, people love their raises. And, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm going to take it all in. And obviously I get a lot more phone calls than usual, which is normal. And, you know, I'm a lot more conversation, you know, when I'm just walking the street. But I'm just taking it all in stride. And, you know, I'm definitely loving this position I'm in. A lot of people would kill to be in it. So, you know, just thankful for it.
Thanks, definitely. You were able to participate with player workouts organized by Derek Mason. You also did some things with Joe Flacco as well. But how good was it for you to be around your fellow teammates?
It was good my first time being around the guys. And, you know, the biggest thing I took from it was just understanding, you know, how they carried themselves and what it's like to be a pro. You know, obviously you can learn a little bit, but it's really only so much you can learn, you know, by studying, just staring at the playbook all day or talking about it. You know, you got to actually go out there and do it. And that's the things that you do miss, you know, with practices and OTAs and things like that. But, I mean, I just really enjoy being around the guys, try to figure out their personalities, figure out how I fit in, and, you know, everything was perfect.
And when this lockout is finally over, you got a lot of catching up to do in terms of the playbook and all that stuff. Are you ready for it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I understand the game of football, you know, and I understand in football on the professional level and the college level. I played in the pro-style offense, and I played in the West Coast offense. So, you know, I understand football itself. I understand terminology. I understand what the defense is trying to do. You know, I understand how to read coverages. So from a mental standpoint, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind I can catch up, you know, to the speed of the game, you know, understanding what I'm doing and being confident in my assignments. Obviously, it'll take time, but I'm confident, you know, that I'll be able to do it soon. And, you know, I just got to go out there and catch up to the speed of the game physically because, I mean, there's no way, you know, for us to really get ready, especially as rookies. You know, in my situation, if they were to, you know, miss all the preseason games and, you know, they started as soon as the season started, my first game would be against the Steelers. I mean, you really don't get – that's not a very good warm-up for a rookie, so – you know, I'm just looking forward to them in this lockout and getting in and learning as much as possible.
And speaking of the Steelers and that being, again, the first game of the season, how much of that rivalry have you heard about now, and how important, you know, has it been stressed upon you that, you know, this is the Steelers, the Ravens, and the rivalry?
Oh, I mean, first thing first, you know, me being in this area, you know, and playing in this area, and being in a college town, I've seen fights over the Steelers-Ravens game. You know, those fans are crazy. And, you know, also just understanding the history behind it and the type of people involved and, you know, the fans that reach out to me on my Twitter, you know, a page like that, you know, it never goes a day without someone mentioning the Steelers. You know, you would almost think there's no other team in the league, you know, the way they talk about them. So, I mean, I'm just excited to be a part of it and arguably the best rivalry in football.
And speaking of that, Lamar Woodley from the Steelers, he came out and he said that the Ravens can't win a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco as the quarterback. You worked with Flacco a little bit. Can the Ravens win a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco?
I mean, I don't see why not. At the end of the day, you know, he has the talent that he can get it done. And he's done nothing really but win, you know, since he's been there. He's gone to the playoffs every year he's been there. And he's had some of the best leaders, and, you know, Ozzie Newsome, he's a great judge of talent. So, I mean, to me, you know, from the outside looking in, again, I'm new, you know, to this whole situation. I see no reason why, you know, he couldn't win a Super Bowl or why he will not win a Super Bowl.
And, Tori, on this show, we like to play a great game called Who's Better. I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
Yeah.
What's better, McDonald's or Burger King?
McDonald's. I eat there entirely too much.
McDonald's is better, by the way. I agree with you. Better football conference. the SEC or the ACC?
Oh, I play in the ACC, so you know I'm going to say it. But the SEC, you know, they brought them national championships in the past 2 years. And we in the ACC, we just all beat up on each other. So, I mean, I don't know. I play in the ACC, so I'm going to say that. Keep it at that.
Better city, Baltimore, Maryland, or College Park, Maryland?
Definitely Baltimore. College Park's a real college town. You know, Baltimore is a city. They have a lot of different options. So, I mean, I say Baltimore.
Better place to shop, Aeropostale or The Gap?
Gap or Aeropostale? I don't know. I rarely go in those two stores.
That's a good thing right there. That's a good thing to hear right there. That's a very, very, very good thing. Especially as an NFL player.
Better rapper, Jay-Z or Lil Wayne?
Lil Wayne. I'm a Wayne fan. And
Lil Wayne better than Jay-Z?
Oh, yeah, we had this argument all the time. You know, our teammates, that was probably a locker room argument at least once a week, you know, about who's better. And, you know, I like Wayne's whole, you know, swag and what he's bringing. You know, the numbers don't lie.
Better dreadlocks, Torrey Smith or Bob Marley?
I'm going to definitely say mine, you know, a little cleaner. Obviously, you know, he's the man. But, of course, I got to go myself.
Definitely. Torrey, thank you for playing the game. And Torrey, where can we find information about you?
The biggest thing right now, I'm always on my Twitter page, which is Torrey Smith, WRTORREY Smith, WR. You know, I'm pretty active on that, so that's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me.
So make sure you get in touch with Torrey Smith, Torrey Smith, WR, at his Twitter account. Get in touch with him there. And Torrey, it was nothing but a pleasure talking to you, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck in this 2011 season. Have a great season, man. Stay injury-free.
All right, appreciate it.
Take care. Torrey Smith, second-round draft pick of the Baltimore Ravens. And Torrey Smith, he's expecting to have a big year. And, you know, he does a great job in the return game, does a great, great job in the return game. And we'll see how he's used in Baltimore, but he touched on a little bit about that Steelers and Ravens rivalry, man, and those guys are going back and forth. You recently had Ray Rice kind of poking at Hines Ward after Hines Ward had his little DUI situation. I mean, and it goes back to the whole Twitter thing, and right now, you know, you got a lot of guys on Twitter saying a lot of things, and some things maybe they probably regret. How do you view this whole Twitter thing, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, we talked about it, Paul, I know you're trying to stoke a fire. I told you, I think that the Twitter today is one of the – you talk about when what James Harrison says about what the real devil is, and this is. This is, you know, this because when you put something out there and you have 100 million people following you, and especially the media is always following everybody, you know, you can't make a mistake. And unfortunately, part of interpersonal communication, you're going to say something once that you maybe didn't want to say or was out of context. But when you put it on those boards, everybody sees it. And like Willie said, but then you have to live it down. And the media has a very, very long memory.
And the reality is, and I heard this quote, but Twitter is kind of like, it's an ink pen. So once it's down, it's down. And so it's kind of hard to get it back once you said it. And a lot of times we, you know, we're so quick to be creative and be funny and be witty that in the process of being creative, funny, witty, and all those things, we say things that probably are not the best things to say. And unfortunately, guys are getting themselves in trouble by saying things and on their Twitter account and using their Twitter, I don't want to say inappropriately, but, you know, just saying things that they probably would not say or probably would think was a bad idea. But, you know, Twitter is a growing thing. Twitter, Facebook, and social media as a whole is a growing thing. It's a growing field. And then you have Google Plus that is on the way as well. So all those things are out there. All these things are out there. And, it's very easy to get caught up. Very easy to get caught up.
Well, I mean, you know, and I wonder, though, Paul, and I do, you know, I often say that this stuff, is it the beginning you saw or we saw in the you know, the trendings of the 80s and the 90s, and certainly now in the 2000s, and we're getting in, you know, in our finding the groove here of technology. But if I was especially of an athlete, or if I was an entertainer, I would really be a little bit more. I would try to be more private than public, because one of the biggest problems is what they have done with Twitter, with Facebook, is it very much has led to an increase in what I'll call competition through replaceability. Everyone now is extremely replaceable, because the next fan or the next star is seconds away. You can put yourself – you get a record contract now by just posting yourself on the Internet. And so, if, you know, in sports to a certain degree, are you really going – is playing a game as important as talking it up? I mean,
right.
Like, it's almost now that, the player with the most following of fans, you know, as Willie used to say in the 80s, this was not how – football, you know, came to be. But you're the most recognizable now because you're a social media whore, if you will, not because you're a Pro Bowler.
And a lot of people are going on their Twitter accounts and they're tweeting a lot, and a lot of ways they're getting themselves in the news. And, you know, as old saying, any publicity is good publicity. And, you know, some people may agree, some people may disagree, but they're putting themselves out there, putting themselves in the news by some of the things that they're saying, sometimes good and sometimes bad, unfortunately. And, you know, you got guys, Chad Ochocinco, he spent a lot of time on his Twitter account. You know, I mean, but Chad Ochocinco still puts the work in. You know, guys, it's one thing, I guess at the end of the day, if you're on your Twitter account and you're doing, you know, what you need to do off the field and handling your business, I guess it's all good. But I guess the thing that we run into, the thing that, The problem that comes with Twitter is those thoughts that you have in your head, and every thought that you have in your head does not need to be written down, and people don't really need to know about it, quite frankly. I mean, you got to be careful what you're doing on these, you know, social networks. You definitely have to be careful what you're doing there. You've got to be careful because you get yourself in a lot of trouble, a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. And unfortunately, guys are getting themselves in a lot of trouble nowadays with their Twitter accounts. But hopefully, people will be smarter. People will do the right things. And people will on their Twitter accounts, people will, you know, just be smart about this whole thing, because you never know. You may write something that could be offensive, and you had it yesterday. You had Golden Tate talking about NASCAR on his Twitter page, Golden Tate of the Seattle Seahawks, talking about NASCAR on his Twitter page, talking about Jimmy Johnson and the rest of the NASCAR guys. I mean, I kind of thought what he said was, you know, wasn't really that big of a deal in general, but, you know, he did apologize to Jimmy Johnson, did apologize to NASCAR fans. He did call some of the fans rednecks, so. You know, that you do have to apologize for that one. But, again, it's just people going on Twitter, and especially with political correctness. And the society we live in, I mean, we are so politically correct, it's kind of sickening at times. But you got to be careful about some of the things you write and some of the things you say. It's just the nature of our society at this point. Be careful. Say what you need to say, but be careful what you're saying, because it could bite you in the butt big time. And some people, it's biting them in the butt big time, big time.
Well,
and
that's why I say, Paul, I think ultimately, you know, I just wonder, you know, why if you are, you know, especially an athlete, you're not an entertainer. So don't entertain. I mean, you're
well, you are an entertainer.
Paul,
you are an entertainer.
You're an athlete. No.
You're an athlete slash entertainer.
Paul,
sports is here to entertain. You are an entertainer.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
Well, how are you not an entertainer? When you watch sports, are you entertained, yes or no?
You're not. If you're a wide receiver, you're there to catch a football. If you're a first baseman, you're there to hit for a high average and make sure you get the guy out at first. If you're a pitcher, you want a low ERA. Paul, that's an off shot. You have to remember, sports, before fans, before stadiums, there were just pure sports. The economics came after the sport. Paul, don't confuse the issue. I know it's hard for you.
No, I'm not confusing the issue. The bottom line is sports is entertainment. Sports is there to entertain. You watch sports to be entertained. You don't watch sports because just to watch it. You watch it to be entertained. You don't watch – it's like watching your favorite TV show. You don't watch your favorite TV show not to be entertained. Sports is entertainment. This is entertainment. They make rules and everything in sports to game, to be entertaining, to game, to be fun. Sports is entertainment. It is sport. ESPN, the biggest sports network out there. In ESPN, there is entertainment sports network. Sports is entertainment. That's what sports and entertainment are together. They're one and the same. Sports is entertainment.
Okay. I mean, when you're done, you'll give me, keep going. Get it all out. I mean, I guess you're having a bad day here. But when you talk about entertainment, Who are you talking about? Are you talking about the athlete or are you talking about the audience? Because the player does not play sports to entertain. The player plays sports to make money. There is not one Paul, show me a professional athlete who is paid to not perform. Show me
a professional athlete that's paid not to entertain. You entertain by scoring touchdowns, correct? You entertain by sacking the quarterback, correct?
Paul. But you're now. I'm entertained, but the athlete is not entertained. The athlete is paid to perform.
Let's bring in a caller. Let's get a caller's opinion on this. Hello, y'all. Go for it.
Yeah, I wanted to call and comment, and I wanted to say that I definitely agree with what Mr. Jeremy is saying. That before anything, all four of these major sports is a business. It's a huge business, but it's a business nonetheless. It's a business first and foremost, and it's a cutthroat business at that. The minute that you're not producing, the minute that you're not putting the numbers up, and the minute that you're not doing what you say you're going to do when you sign those dotted lines and get those millions and millions of dollars, you're thrown out the back window and forgot about.
It is a business, but entertainment business. I think it is entertainment.
Correct.
Now,
I agree that your job is to entertain.
It's a familiar voice that we're hearing, and we haven't heard this voice in a while. So I mean, can the caller properly identify himself as a long-term, listener to this show? Or is this maybe, am I wrong? Is it a new voice?
This is an old but good voice.
This is the first time in a long time voice.
I tried to get on, but since I've been listening, this has been so many more guests and so many more callers that I've just been, like a lot of these pro athletes, thrown out the back door and forgot about. And I can't get on when I try to. But that's okay. I still have love for this show.
Well, let's be clear. There's a lot of love here for our callers. There's a lot of love here for you. So continue to call in and continue to support. Go for the blogtalkradio.com/PKN. Continue to do it.
I think, Paul, what you're doing is, and it's normal for someone without, I think, the mindset of proper thought progression. And you heard the caller say that you are lacking that clearly. We're not talking about the fans watching the game. ESPN is there to service the fans. There is not one professional athlete, Paul, not one professional athlete, who derives their salary from ESPN. Former athletes do, but and current athletes who are out of season, but that's their second job. Every professional athlete is paid by a team, and they are paid by a team to play a game that entertains people, but this isn't WWF. Vince McMahon, Roger Goodell, you're making it WWE by calling it. The entertainment is an offshot of what happens. But these players are there to perform, and so their performance certainly is entertaining. But by no means, Paul, is an athlete's number one job to win an Emmy. There aren't Emmys. There are no awards. Just so you understand, there's the best actor, the most entertaining, the greatest, you know, song of the year. They're entertainers. Athletes don't have award shows, Paul. They've been created for them because ESPN wants ratings, and they pay athletes to go to them. But understand, at the end of the NFL season, there is what? There's the MVP of the league, and that's the best athlete, not the guy that entertains them the most. Dennis Rodman, who was there entertaining, I don't remember his MVP award. I do remember him
being enshrined into the Hall of Fame. So, again, this athletes are, yes, they're here to do their job, but they're also here to entertain, and this is the entertainment business. It's entertainment. Yeah, it's entertainment. Yes, they're paid to do some things. It is a business. It's all that, but it is the entertainment business. This is football. We watch football to be entertained. We don't watch football not to be entertained. We watch sports to be entertained. And let's bring in another athlete. Let's bring in free agent cornerback Fabian Washington. Excuse me, Fabian. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing well. And Fabian, the lockout is close to ending, sir. I'm a fan of football. I'm very excited by this. But how different of an offseason has this been for you?
It's been very different. I was actually talking to one of my friends, and I just told him, and I haven't had this much free time since high school. I've been off for 6 months, and it's amazing. You really don't have anything to do. You go work out. And I come back home and build couch potatoes. It's kind of boring.
And right now, Fabian, this has got to be a tough offseason for you because you're a free agent. And so are you extra frustrated by this lockout because of your free agent status?
Not at all. Everything's going to happen when it happens. You know, I wish it would have happened earlier, but it looked like free agency should be here within a matter of days. So it's here now. You can't sit around and pout about what already happened. I'm just excited for the future.
And that's a good attitude to have, and the future should be very, very close to happening. And Fabian, 2010 for you kind of was a tough year for you, kind of up and down for you. You lost your starting job in week 11. How frustrating was 2010 for you as a player?
Man, it was tough. It was one of those things, you know, you get benched, and you try to just work back and be a team guy, which I was doing, you know, practice hard and give our offense the best look I could possibly have. You know, it's frustrating watching football when you're supposed to be playing football.
Right.
So I'm gonna make your 2011 much better.
What do you think when you look at it from your vantage point? What do you think? You know, what happened was the rule changes, or was it just the fact that, you know, as a professional athlete who's, you know, long-term career, everyone is certainly not going to show up for work every day 100%, and for athletes sometimes that may be a couple of games because there's only 16 really days of, you know, of public work.
Exactly. You want to play your best every Sunday. Of course you're going to have some bad games. You just don't want to have too many of them. And I had back-to-back bad Sundays there, and decided to sit me down, which, hey, it's bigger than any player. So the coach decided to do that. Hey, I was all for it. Hey, let the locker room keep pushing. Anything you do, ask me to do, I did. Did I like it? No. But, hey, they pay you to do a job, and I did what I could do in practice. And I really didn't play too much after week 11, but, you know, like I always say, it is what it is. You just got to keep moving forward, stay positive.
What was the reaction from you know, the coaching staff, from your teammates, for a guy like you to come back and take that reduced role? But as you had said, do it with an open mind and recognize that you're a professional and you're there to support the team in whatever role is possible.
You know, I think they looked at that as a positive. I know Coach Pagano, he was around when I was in Oakland. He was one of the coaches that got to me in Oakland. He saw
how I handled things in my younger years. So he was definitely happy I've turned into a pro, because in my younger years, I didn't take things like that so easily.
We're talking to Fabian Washington, free agent cornerback. Fabian played for the Ravens in 2010. And Fabian, fair or unfair, you've been criticized for your tackling. Talk about that.
Man, hey, I think it's definitely fair. I've had some good years at it and had a few bad years at it. It's not that I'm not willing. I've missed a few tackles. And, you know, when you get that label, it's hard to get it off, saying that you won't tackle. It's, in my case, it's not that I won't tackle. I'll throw it in there. It's just I miss a few at times.
Right. And Fabian, looking at everything now, you were a part of one of the biggest rivalries in the NFL right now, Steelers-Ravens rivalry. A lot of talking on both sides. How physical and how intense is a Steelers-Ravens football game?
Now, if anybody's ever played sports and you've been in a big game, times that times 10 when the Steelers and Ravens are playing, you know,
wow.
Monday morning, you're going to be banged up. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You playing that game, you're going to be banged up. Both sides banged up. You feel like a train wreck Monday and Tuesday. So you just prepare yourself for it. You just leave it out on the field.
And Lamar Woodley from the Steelers, he came out and said that the Ravens cannot win a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco as the quarterback. Can the Ravens win a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco?
Yes, I think they will. Joe is
okay.
A great quarterback. People don't know Joe. I see Joe every day. Joe's outspoken. He's a leader. He is the Baltimore Ravens leader. People really don't see it on the field, but we see it behind closed doors. Joe steps up. He says what needs to be said. You know, I think the guy's a leader, and he's a proven winner. That's no ifs, ands, or buts. So I think they will win one with Joe. It's just when will they win it?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, though, Fabian, is when players say that, you know, obviously a lot of it is provocative to get that reaction. But when what does it do, though, to the rivalry? How does it change, or is it just, does it stoke it more, or is this rivalry, you know, essentially at a peak where, I mean, there is just no likability or no respect for the opponent?
Oh, yeah, this rivalry is at its peak. There's nothing to be said to piss you off more going into that game. It can be, you can not read no articles, see the news, no TV, and you're still going to be pissed going into that game. It's just one of those games.
And it definitely, well, all the talk going back and forth, it definitely sounds like one of those games. And, Fabian, like we said, you are a free agent. What is your preference at this point? Would you like to return to the Ravens, or do you kind of see yourself going elsewhere?
I see myself going elsewhere. You know, I had fun. I enjoyed the Ravens. Wish them the best. But, yeah, it's time for me to move on.
And is that tough for you to say that, or is it just one of those things in life? It's just time.
It's the business, man. Hey,
right.
You move on. You know?
Right.
So, hey, I definitely love those guys in that locker room. I have a lot of great times, great games. Hey, that locker room is one of a kind.
And do you have a preference of where you like to go?
Not really. Just somewhere where I can play.
Right.
And if you look at
you,
well,
you do a great job
in
the community, man. Your foundation called Franchise Kids Foundation. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's Franchise Kids Foundation is, you know, with me and Mike Jenkins. You know, we're the two names on it, but I would say our moms do all the grunt work. They make it happen. You know, it's stuff, it's things around our community that make sure, you know, if people are in need, we help. Or if organizations are in need, we help. You know, it's just we try to help underprivileged kids by any way we possibly can. We throw football camps. We do Feed the Children. Big shout out to your children, because anytime we've called, they do anything they can do for us with open arms. So they're big supportive of us. You know, we do football camps. It's a lot of things that we try to get done. I know me and Mike, like, we play football, so we're not always around, but our parents are always around and trying to make help somebody out around the Bradenton community.
And what does it mean to kind of give back to your community? What does that mean to you?
It's big for me. You know, I've been blessed to be able to give back, so I feel like whoever has it to give should give. You know,
right.
I'm doing good. My family's doing good. Why not help out somebody else? That's the way I see it.
And that's a great thing that you guys are doing in the community, and that's great, man. And I applaud you for that. And Fabian, I saw something on your Twitter page, very interesting. The Players Association told you guys a couple years back that a lockout would happen. The Players Association told you guys to save your money. How did you prepare yourself financially for this whole lockout?
You know, I grew up, I would say my first 3 years in the league, I acted like a young guy. I was spending money like it would never stop coming. Once I got to the Ravens, got around some guys that, you know, talked to me about spending money, the league didn't have to tell me to start saving money. I was already doing it. So when the lockout came, I wasn't worried about a thing. I'm like, if we have football or not, I'll be fine. But, you know, some guys, believe it or not, it's some guys in the league live check to check. And
right.
I don't understand it, because we make a lot of money. And I it's okay to spend some money. But don't spend it like you're going to be playing football for 30 years, because you really don't know when you're going to be done playing football. So I advise all players, when I'm talking to young guys, put some money away. I'm not saying live like you're broke, but hey, put some money away, because at some point in time you're not going to be playing this game anymore, and you're going to, I don't think you're busting your butt to go work another 9-to-5. So
right.
I tell them, just put it up, man.
When Fabian, do you see, you know, I'm a big proponent. I think the education for professional athletes is so negligent in terms of financial. I mean, it's such an underserved need. Do you see a time where perhaps a group of players or former players are going to, you know, kind of come out and either set up some kind of an institution or some kind of a consulting group to get a hold of these, especially, like you said, younger professional athletes, and make them realize that, I mean, the life that they lead is, you probably know better than anybody, is one injury away. I mean, and then you, for the rest of your life, where will you go?
Exactly. I feel like you got to have a team around you already. You got to have a good support system. You can't have guys around you that's only around you because you play in the league, or like Deion Sanders said a few days ago, a yes man. You don't need those guys around you. You need guys to
right.
tell you, hey, no, I don't think you should do that, or this would be a good idea to do with your money. And it doesn't involve going to buy cars and jewelry and stuff like that.
And Herman Edwards always said, one of everything, one girlfriend, one car, one house, one piece of jewelry, and that's great advice to live by.
That's a great life to live by. How realistic is it? I'm not sure. Not for a young guy. But, hey, if you do that, you have no problems.
But you say that, and, I mean, you were laughing, but I think I'm always very interested to get the player perspective. Why, especially you focus on the younger athlete, is it a factor of their, you know, 18 to 20 years old, and especially coming out of college, and the group of their age, and but they rise from an age of 20, which you cannot escape the brain of a 20-year-old, to having, you know, a $20 million signing bonus or a $5 million signing bonus, and the people around you saying spend. You know, is it just that simple, or is it more to it?
Hello?
I think we of course at the wrong time hit a bad, they call it a bad cell, Paul. He was probably in the midst of telling us that money is a terrible thing to have and to not have.
Fabian, are you there? I think you're right. He wasn't calling a bad cell. Hopefully he calls back. I mean, he had some good stuff to say, very good stuff to say, and some interesting stuff to say. Hopefully he can call back in. I'd love to get his take on that question that you had. I mean, I was waiting for a good answer there. I was waiting in debate for a good answer. Hopefully he'll call him back.
It's always interesting.
Hopefully
we get these athletes on and what they their personal spin on what they see from their vantage point. It's in some points very similar, but in other points it can be a stark contrast.
Right. I mean, you think about it though. I mean, let's be honest. If a guy who's a young guy and I come up with some money, and it's very easy to get caught up in the as Darnarian McCants likes to say, the money holes and clothes. I mean, it's very easy to get caught up in that, and it's understandable when guys get caught up in that. I mean, you come into a lot of money. You come into a lot of money, and you get attention from a lot of different people. A lot of girls give you a lot of attention now. You know, you're getting a lot of attention, and it doesn't take much for you at that point to get a girl. You know what I mean? It, the work that you may have had to put in when you were a little younger, you don't have to put that same type of work in to get a female. It's just, I'm Fabian Washington, and the girl's like, oh, okay, and I play NFL football. I mean, that sometimes the whole it takes. I'm Torrey Smith, and I play NFL football. That's all it takes sometimes, and guys do get caught up in that. And so it's very understandable when guys do get called back, get caught up in that stuff. And it's almost like, what would I do if I was in that situation? Could I handle it? Not sure if I could. And I can't say if I could or not. Not sure if I could. I mean, could you definitely say that you could handle that, Jeremy, if you were a professional athlete?
I think that's why I'm always very interested to hear the majority of these players explain this. Because I think from their eyes, the way that they're able to show it to you is unparalleled. I believe it to be, I would say it's impossible unless you basically were totally sheltered. If you lived a very sheltered, because the minute you're outside, you have friends, people will lie, cheat, steal. I mean, these athletes are getting money stolen from their financial advisors, their agents, their lawyers. So I think when you look at what goes around them, unless you live in a bubble, it would almost to me seem as if it would be impossible.
And you're right. I mean, I don't want to say it's impossible, but it comes pretty close. It's pretty close to impossible. To kind of fight through all that different types of temptation. I mean, that's got to be rough. That's definitely got to be rough. All that temptation that's out there. All that temptation that's out there. That's got to be rough for you as a person to resist. Yeah, I mean, and again, it doesn't take much work for it to happen. In order for you to get it, it doesn't take much work. It doesn't take much work at all. Little to no work, actually. And that's probably also the allure of it. I mean, it's easy. It becomes easy for you. It becomes easier. I mean, if we can all do things that's easy, we're going to try to find a way to do it. And that's easy. That's easy, being with a woman who, doesn't take much to get her. And we're not talking about, just regular women walking down the street. We're talking about the top-of-the-line women. We're talking about grade-A women. We're not talking about you know, we're not talking about just, you know, your standard run-of-the-mill woman. We're talking about grade A, a grade A situation. You know, that's what we're talking about. And to resist that, it's got to be tough, and it's darn near impossible in some respect, but I don't want to say nothing's, you know, nothing's impossible. But, I mean, that's got to be pretty close to it. Pretty, pretty close to it. And hopefully we can get Fabian back. Hopefully Fabian will call back in. And I guess he hit a bad cell. And hopefully he's able to call back in and get his thoughts and finish this up. But, you know, the guy has interesting, you know, he was very candid about what was going on with him. And he doesn't see himself returning to the Baltimore Ravens. And it was a tough year for him. And he acknowledged that. And I was surprised that he did, but he, in terms of the tackling and everything, he acknowledged those things, and he was straight up about it, and, you know, he told them that, he told everybody, he told us that the reality is that he can't. He did not have a good year. Tackling, he didn't have a good year. It just not what just was not his year in Baltimore last year, and, you know, hopefully he lands on his feet elsewhere and successful from there, but, you know, it's tough. You know, like you said, and that was a great question you had. It's a, you know, we all have bad days at work. We all have bad days at work. And the funny thing is, unfortunately, if you have a couple bad days in the NFL, those bad days could be your last days. And that's the reality of the NFL. That's the reality of the National Football League. It stands for not for long. And for some guys, it's not for long. And like you said, Jeremy, you could have a bad week. You could have a bad day. But overall, 2 to 3 bad days means that you could go home and your career could conceivably be over. That's just the life of an NFL player. And that's why it's very important, as Fabian said, to kind of put that stuff, put money aside, because tomorrow it's truly not promised. Put some stuff aside, man, because it's not promised. And you could lose it all. You could lose it all in one hit. It could take one hit, and then that's it. You know, one hit, it's over. One hit, and all that money that you had, you're going to have to start using it because, you know what, you can't do nothing else. You don't know how to do anything else. You know what I mean? And that's why it's very important, man, to kind of take care of your situation and kind of do the necessary things so when your time is up, when your number is called, you're prepared, and you're prepared to live your life and live your life effectively and not live your life in a way where you're going to have to pick up a job, and it's going to be a tough job because you can't really do it because your bones is hurting, your body's broke down. So, I mean, these are things that guys have to think about in the National Football League, and the lockout is here, and, you know, some guys, like you said, are living paycheck to paycheck, and you would think that guys want to live in would live from paycheck to paycheck when they have all this money. But, you know, if you spend like crazy, it's going to happen. That's just reality.
Well, I mean, that's and, you know, from, I mean, that was sad to hear that, Paul, that there's a player, you know, even if you're making the minimum money, I mean, you have to remember some of these guys, the minimum is $500,000. And if you're making $500,000 and you're living paycheck to paycheck, I mean, you have to look at some things. Especially when you're making $500,000 and your job is to be an athlete, you really, you know, have to look at what are you going to do when you're not going to make $500,000. Or if you're making more than and if you're in the millions, I mean, that's like it gets. That's why I say it gets to a point where you have to wonder, and that's when you talk about, you know, the Facebook and the Twitter. Is this a good thing for a guy who's living paycheck to paycheck to be told, now that 100 million people follow you, and again, you know, they have an image to a social media image to uphold. They can't be out there talking about, you know, a balanced budget or we're going to make, you know, the fact that Americans don't have a negative savings rate. You cannot be in the media saying that that Americans spend too much. You'll go from a million followers to no followers. People don't want to hear that. And especially these athletes, they can't live that life. If you're an athlete, it's almost like you have another job. You have to live like an athlete. You can't live like just a person who's trying to save money so when they retire, they can enjoy their life. That's left for everyone else.
And that's you know, it's a great point, but it's a reality of life sometimes. And old saying, to whom much is given, much is expected. And fair or unfair, that's kind of the life that some athletes have to live. And unfortunately, it's not fair, but, you know, I guess it comes kind of with the territory, it comes with the turf, and it comes with the whole situation. That's life, you know, that's the reality of it. And, you know, it is what it is in a lot of ways. It really is what it is. But, I mean, that's what comes with fame, and that's what comes with becoming an athlete and becoming a big-time athlete, making big-time money. And that's what comes with it. That's just the reality of life sometimes. And like I said before, it becomes is what it is. But we're going to be joined shortly now by actor Lester Spade. And Lester, he's involved in Transformers, the new Transformer movie, and that's out in theaters now. Make sure you check it out. Make sure you go watch that movie. But it's out there now. And Lester is going to be joining us shortly, and we're going to be very interested to get Lester's take on that whole situation with the Transformers and that whole movie. I mean, it's a lot of special effects in that movie, a lot of great things in that movie, and Lester's going to tell us about it. I want to move real quickly now to the Michael Irvin situation. Michael Irvin posed for a gay magazine called Out, popular gay magazine, and in that article, Michael Irvin talked about his brother, who came out, was a homosexual, and Michael talked about how that in his life kind of made him go towards women more and kind of made him a womanizer on some level. And looking at the article, I mean, Michael Irvin, you know, I'm not really going to touch how he feels about the whole homosexual community and everything. He, you know, he's for equality, and that's a good thing. But one thing, I guess the problem I had with it, the only problem I had with it was him posing and kind of showing off his body. You know, there was a song, you don't have to take your clothes off to have a good time. You don't have to, you know, show your body to support a cause. And that's my only problem with it. I mean, I understand you're down for the cause. I understand that you're down for equality. But did you really need to take your shirt off and be on the cover
to
say that?
But do you, Paul, before you go there, and I mean this, do you know that was Irving that did that? I think to say
regardless
the point
of
that,
Irving or whatever, he took the photos. He posed for it.
He took the
photos.
But again, we got to sell magazines. I mean, in order to see Mike Irvin, in order to want to buy that magazine, something has to draw you in. Isn't it fair to say, you know, that still in this country, that's why there's covers on magazines. I mean, Us Weekly gets you to buy their magazine because of who they put on there. So
I agree with that.
This was from Michael Irving. You know, this was very, I felt I was shocked to see, you know, how open he was in the article, and I felt it was brave of him to do. The fact that they, you know, the manner in which maybe they took the photo, I mean, I'm going to tell you, I think it's wrong of you to say that, because then you have to understand all he's trying to do is sell a magazine. So
yeah, but I understand that. I know, I understand that, but at the same time, Michael knows that whether or not he wants to pose in that type of pose. Michael knows that. That's up for Michael to decide whether he wants to take
that
photo or not.
What was wrong with the pose, Paul?
I just thought, you know, you don't need to show your body to say that you support a cause. And in some respect, he almost is coming like becoming a sex symbol to the gay community because of it. It's almost like he's trying to. I'm not saying he is. It's almost like he's trying to, on some respect. And I just don't think it's necessary for him to show his body to say that he supports the cause. He could have easily done that photo shoot, that cover shoot with a suit on, or just with a football uniform on. And, you know, he could have easily done it that way. That's just my opinion on the matter. But, again, I support what he did, and I don't have a problem with what he did whatsoever. All I'm saying is he could have just – the cover shoot could have been a little different, and I thought, you know, it could have been a suit on instead, or just a football outfit on instead of that. But do you, one of the things he touched, do you think that pro sports, and I don't think it is, but do you think pro sports is ready for an openly gay athlete?
Oh, no. I mean, I
don't think it is.
And that's why I said I was to say I was shocked, I think, is a big understatement. I was blown away. I genuinely was surprised. I was flabbergasted, speechless. I think more athletes, though, it's important, you know, for more athletes to get out there and to, especially for Mike Harbin, who has, you know, a homosexual brother or a homosexual sister, whomever it may be, to tell your
brother
story. But I'm saying it's obviously in not, you know, Mike Harbin is not the only professional athlete with an openly homosexual sibling. And my point was, you know, I think it was for him that and like you said, it was a monumental, I guess, to the movement. But it's a shame because while these sports are you know, very physical and the like, I guess, though, I mean, the broader question is, I mean, how many potentially homosexual athletes are playing that have to be, you know, theoretically in the closet? Because statistically, you have to wonder. I mean, can it be that way, that there's an absolute zero, an absolute minimum?
Well, statistically speaking, obviously there is some. There has to be some. And that's just going on pure statistics. There has to be some. But I don't think sports world is ready for it to happen. And I guess on some level it may be at some point, but I don't envision it anytime soon. I just think sports, it's kind of a manly, macho type of situation. And guys aren't willing to come out because of that, I think. And, you know, it's not, you know, you're in a locker room, you're in an NFL locker room, it's a bunch of manly men, so to speak, you know. And NFL, NBA, NHL, any sports locker room, it's just not, to me, something that it's going to happen. I don't see that happening anytime soon. Mike Harbin thinks it can happen. I just don't see it just yet. Will it happen? Probably at some point. But I can't say it's going to happen in the next 5 years. I mean, do you see the next 5 years this happening, Jeremy?
No. I mean, he was selling covers. No, absolutely not. We both. No, I mean, you could see. I mean, sport. There's still comments almost every, you know, month of one athlete saying, you know, having a homophobic statement on the first 20 minutes of SportsCenter.
Well, you had James Harrison who referred to Roger Goodell with the gay slur. So,
right.
I mean, it's true. It's very true what you're saying. And I agree with you. I mean, but
until,
I just don't think
until that. The athletes, until they understand, you know, that the word has a detrimental meaning, and then I think there's no awareness. I give a lot of credit to Mike Harbin. I think what he did, and especially who he is, for it to be a player as noted as Mike Harbin, and the candid comments that he made, I thought were, you know, very, very insightful.
Yeah, I mean, and again, only thing I'm touching on is just the cover. You know, I didn't necessarily think that, you know, he had to do the cover. The cover did not really have to be the way it was. It just didn't. It really didn't, in my opinion. It's just my opinion. But, I mean, again, just like the old song says, you don't have to take your clothes off to have a good time. You do not have to show your body to say that you support a cause. Just my opinion. I don't think you have to. It's just the way I feel on that issue. But I don't think you have to. You just don't have to, in my mind. Would you? Obviously, you disagree. But again,
I totally disagree. I don't just disagree. I think that.
I do agree. I mean, I think it is brave on his part to come out with that. I mean, he didn't have to do it. And, you know, for him to kind of come out with that, I think it's a brave thing, and it's a good thing. And I just don't think, like he thinks, that, you know, the world is ready, the world of sports is ready for an openly homosexual athlete. I don't think that is true. And, you know, I could see it in the next few years. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I just don't think at this point it's true. I don't think it's just at this point it's true. I really don't.
No, absolutely.
I'm going to be George. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think, you know, I wonder, because of the nature of what you're dealing with, I mean, is it really a reality? Is that something that can happen, considering the nature of what you're dealing with?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree on that. I mean, but I think it will happen though, at some point. I can't just say it's going to happen in the next few years. I don't see it happening right away. I just don't think people are ready for it. I just don't think people are ready for it. I don't think that person would be, you know, I mean, it's going to take being brave on some level to come out and do that as well. So I don't even think people at this point are brave enough for that to happen or in order to do that. I don't think they are at this stage. I don't think so. But I could be wrong. I could be very, very wrong. But I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. But you never know. You never know. And you wonder how many magazines it's actually going to sell because of Michael Irvin on the cover. Obviously, it's getting a lot of attention at this point. So, I mean, I expect it to sell a lot.
Well,
and, you know.
No, I mean, if nothing else, I'm glad it got the attention. I think it was important to put that out there. And as I said, I think for it to be an athlete of his stature was groundbreaking, because you can't take away from the fact, and his story too. I mean, and how can he was? You can't dispute or discount, you know, the way in which he said things, and it came across.
But was it attention seeking on your part, on his part?
You know what, Paul? I don't know. I think the reason I'll say it is because so far, what you see, I do very much intend on reading the article. I do think it for him to go out though and psychoanalyze himself and his behavior. I would say I wouldn't, if you're trying to seek attention, to go back and to have to talk about things that obviously, you know, we all know about, I would very much say no because of that. Because, again, we very much know of his past and how Michael Irvin kind of got into a public eye, not because of his playing. So I think it was, you know, to a certain degree, a little bit of cathartic, perhaps, for him to do and say a lot of that. So you give him, I think, a lot of credit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, say what you will about whether you agree with how he posed on the cover. I think you do have to give him credit for kind of exposing himself and kind of and telling his story, because it's not a story or a cause that he really needed to be a part of at this point, but he, you know, give him credit for it. I definitely give him a lot of credit for that. You know, I mean, wish Michael Irvin and good luck. Nothing but the best of luck going forward. Maybe we can get him on, give him a talk about it. I would love to kind of get his take on it, and, you know, hear what he has to say on the whole issue at this point. I mean, also another issue that's out there is, you know, NBA players with the lockout going on are exploring it and thinking about going over to Europe. You have a guy, Deron Williams, who signed a contract with a team, a Turkish team, and he's prepared to go over there if there is a lockout. And you have Sasha Vujacic, who actually signed with a Turkish team. You have a few other guys talking about it. I don't really believe it. I think that some of it is just, you know, game. I think some of it's kind of doing it as a negotiation ploy, I mean, leverage, if you will, for the players. I don't envision a lot of people going over to Europe like they said they were. I don't see it happening. And a part of that also, if you look at it, I mean, a lot of times in Europe, you got guys involved in situations where they're not getting paid on time and things of that nature. And, you know, it's not that way in the NBA. And you have a lot of protection in the NBA with the Players Association and everything. So I don't see as many players going overseas as, you know, people are saying that they will. I don't see it happening. But, you know, people can talk the talk and you know, say what they want to say and say that, you know, I'm going to go up to Europe and this, that, and what have you. But I don't believe it. I don't believe it. And I won't believe it until I see a bunch of people doing it. And the reality is, Deron Williams is not – he's only going over there until the lockout is over, theoretically. So I don't – you know, I don't see it being a big issue. I don't see a bunch of players going over. I just think it's leverage, it's negotiation.
If anything, too, Paul, and I mean it, it's a stupid stupid and very dangerous game to play because the bluff here can be traumatic to them. Because I think, as I said, in comparison to the NFL, I think the NBA owners very much realize that, you know, this lockout for them is just as important for them as it is for their players because their game is suffering and they're all too willing to open their books. And that I would say if I'm a player, I'm not really going to be that quick to sit there and say, oh, we're going to go overseas. We should have done that a long time ago because this very much looks like an ownership group that is in this for the long haul. They're not to say they want it to be in the long haul, but I think they realize they need to get their league in order. So to
Definitely.
Say you're going to go overseas, you may see an ownership group saying, it can be a very hard line negotiation tactic, kind of forcing them to either do it or looking, forge, and ultimately B, I mean, it gives then the owners a greater piece of leverage because now this money that they talk about having and thinking that the owners were going to do something they weren't is gone.
But if you do have a guy like Deron Williams who's an NBA superstar, and you have a guy like him going overseas, that is going to change some things, I think.
It's not one player.
I think you get a guy like Deron Williams and you get another prominent player going overseas, ownership is going to have to think twice. They're definitely going to have to think twice if you have all these players kind of in a mass exodus going overseas. Ownership is going to have to think twice.
One of the things I will caution you and say this. If there wasn't the caveat for him to return, then I would agree with you. The fact that they can go and return when a deal is struck, to me, is mean. That's why I say it's meaningless, because what's the long-term effect? The long-term effect is, we're out. If I'm those teams, I'm going to say, you know what, I don't want that. I would want what? You want to say, no matter what, you're playing either at least 1 year or you're playing the contract. Because if you're these foreign teams, you know you're getting – it's a rented player. There is no long-term value.
Yeah, but if you're a foreign team and Deron Williams is coming over, you know, that kind of helps your brand. That kind of helps your situation.
But he's coming over game
Why not take
game,
a Deron Williams?
Well, they're going to take him, but they take him game to game, Paul. They take him for one game, for three games, for 10 games. They don't take him, for a three-year contract. So that's why I say – you know, to me, the mindset that these leagues are going the foreign leagues are going to be able to long-term benefit. The only way they benefit long-term is if they sign these athletes to hard-line long-term deals.
I think it's negotiation play. I really do think this is about getting leverage. I don't really believe anybody's going to actually do it. I don't think it's going to be a mass exodus. I really don't think so. But I think if there is, you as ownership have to think about getting this thing solved because some of your best players are overseas. Some of your best players are not playing in the NBA where they need to be playing. So I think in a lot of ways, if that continues to happen, that's a bad thing.
And where there's a big danger is going to be the injuries. and we really didn't get to that, you know, much, but and it's still kind of far to speculate, but the more players that do get out there, you don't want to see a guy like Darren Williams get over there and get injured. That would be traumatic.
Yeah, that definitely would be a bad situation if Darren Williams goes overseas and happens to get hurt. I mean, that definitely would be a tragic situation if that were to happen. But that is the risk that you take when you do that. I mean, you have guys, look at T.O., for example. I mean, T.O., we don't know how he hurt his ACL, just been reports that he hurt it while working out, but there also have been reports that he hurt it by filming a reality TV show or a TV show. So with that being said, if T.O. hurt himself filming a TV show, I mean, that doesn't look good for him, and that should open some eyes with guys that, you know, maybe this is not worth the risk. Maybe this is not really worth the risk. Is it really worth going out there and possibly tearing up your ACL? Is it worth that? And I have to say the question is absolutely positively no. But those are the risks associated with doing things outside of a lockout. And, you know, I mean, those are the risks. And those are the risks that guys have taken. And that's the risk that, you know, Darren Williams takes by going overseas. That's the risk that guys take. Ray Edwards, that's the risk he takes by boxing. Tom Zbikowski, that's the risk he takes by boxing. I mean, everybody is taking risks by doing these things. And, you know, those are the risks associated with that whole situation. I want to switch gears now to Adam Pac-Man Jones, and I want to get your thoughts on that, Jeremy. But and looking at that situation, my thoughts on this whole Pac-Man Jones situation is this. I mean, you know, if you're Pac-Man Jones, you got to be careful. You got to be careful in what you do, what you say, and where you go. But at the same time, it's kind of hard for me to believe that a Pac-Man Jones with a neck brace on would be able to resist police the way apparently he resisted, or which, you know, at least that's what they're saying. It's kind of hard for me to believe that. Granted, I'm not saying, I don't know if Pac-Man was in the wrong or not in the wrong, but it's kind of hard for me to believe that Pac-Man Jones will risk his situation by resisting arrest with police officers with a neck brace on. I mean, is that possible? I mean, do you think? I mean, obviously,
I mean,
anything is possible with Pac-Man Jones.
Problem. Is it possible? Sure, it's possible. But I go back to, I agree with you. I wouldn't say with the neck brace on as much as I would think if I'm Pac-Man Jones, I think more than anybody, he's got to be the most aware of who he is and, you know, what he's. I just sometimes do feel like these athletes are very much targets, and he very easily could have been, you know, taken. They saw him, and these are cops. Law enforcement officers are people too. They're fans, and unfortunately, as fair as we have to be to the athletes, we also have to be fair, you know, to everyone else. And could people see these guys and not like them as people, as persons, and want to say, hey, I'm going to be the guy to end this? Yeah, I, and so when you see that, you look at it and you think it's unfortunate, but it's real. And I, like you, Paul, I will choose to believe and refuse to believe that Pac-Man Jones is this stupid, that he could have been so stupid to, you know, resist arrest, A, with the neck brace on, and B, coming out of the ordeal he came out of.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you can't be surprised because his history says that he does this type of thing. But I don't think, I mean, I don't know how you can resist arrest. I mean, maybe, you know, there was talk that he was cursing at the cops and was kind of rowdy. And I guess you could curse at cops, and I guess that could be disorderly conduct and on some respect. But I don't know how well you could resist arrest if you know, a bunch of cops or any cops are trying to restrain you. And you're, I mean, I don't know how much you can restrain with a neck brace on. I mean, that's just my take on it. I mean, Pac-Man Jones is a guy who has made a lot of mistakes throughout his life. And, I'm all for second chances. I'm even all for third chances. And hopefully, in that particular situation, he is innocent and that he will avoid any type of things. But, you know, the odds are against it. The odds are truly, truly against it for Adam Pac-Man Jones. But he's a guy that finds a way to get himself in trouble. And, you know, he kind of stayed out of trouble for a little bit, but he's, you know, snuck back into trouble again. Snuck back into trouble, and, you know, hopefully Pac-Man Jones will stay out of trouble and do the right things in his life moving forward, hopefully. But he apparently was out celebrating his wife's birthday, which is a good thing. And, you know, kudos for Pac-Man. He probably got some brownie points celebrating his wife's birthday and everything. But he also, along the way, got caught up in some things. And, you know, hopefully Adam Pac-Man Jones will get some things right. And, you know, hopefully we'll see him again on the NFL field. But it's not looking good for Adam Pac-Man Jones. And did you hear it? The Pittsburgh Pirates are tied for first place in the NL Central. Can you believe it? The Pittsburgh Pirates, one of the worst franchises in baseball. The Pittsburgh Pirates, who haven't really done anything since 1992. The Pittsburgh Pirates, they have found a way to climb into first place. That's amazing. They are tied for first place in the NL Central with the St. Louis Cardinals. I'm shocked. I'm amazed. But they're there. And we'll see how long they stay. But believe it or not, they are tied for first place in the National League Central. I'm shocked. I'm amazed. And, you know, we'll see what happens going forward. But the Pittsburgh Pirates, at this point of the season, are tied for first place in the National League Central. Unbelievable. Unreal. Who would have thunk it? I sure would not have thunk that at all. It's almost time. It's that time, everybody. It's that time. You're stupid. It's that time. Each and every week, we give somebody that designation as stupid, and we call it "you stupid." And, you know, I got to do this. The United States government and the prosecutors in the Roger Clemens case. You got to be one of the dumbest people on the face of this earth. First of all, it's a waste of money, you know, going after Bonds and Clemens and all these perjurers. These guys aren't menaces to society. Don't waste my money. We're a country that's already in debt, lots of debt. So, don't waste my money going after guys like Bonds and Clemens, guys who are not menaces to society, not even close. But the reality is this. Here's the situation. The government messed up. They put in some evidence that they weren't supposed to. Clemens' lawyers pounced on it, and the judge declared a mistrial, and the trial may happen again in September. But you got to be so stupid. It seemed to me you had a pretty good case. You had a better case than they had against Bonds. You had a trainer. They didn't have a trainer in the Bonds case. Apparently you may have some syringes that has Roger Clemens' DNA on it and steroids as well. I mean, you have all these things, and you know what? You find a way to mess up this case. For that, not only are you stupid, not only are you dumb, not only are you ridiculous, not only are you asinine, not only are you just the stupidest person, I can't even come up with the words at this point. That's how dumb it was. But the reality is, the prosecutors in the Roger Clemens case, you're stupid. Jeremy?
Well, we talked a lot. Actually about it in the beginning part of the show, and I'm going to focus on James Harrison and mainly for what Willie Rose spoke about, and that is the athlete of today who society looks at and waits for basically say something unintelligent, inarticulate, and plain stupid, and he fits the mold. And here's a player who comes out and said, you know, homophobic slur, equates a person to the devil. It puts a black eye on what, if you are trying to be a professional athlete and have any level of intellectual respect and not be treated like a piece of meat, it puts you 20 years behind a movement.
And it's unfortunate because there are athletes out there and there are entertainers out there that have views and that do and could have value in society. And for him to come out and not only that, say that the despicable things he said about his teammates, it's very unfortunate. And athletes like James Harrison who want to go out and just say things because they can, they sound as stupid as they look, and they look as stupid as they sound.
So James Harrison, the United States prosecutor in the Roger Clemens case, you're stupid. We want to thank Fabian Washington for stopping by. We also want to thank Tory Smith. We also want to thank the great Willie Rowe for stopping by. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pGant, where you can listen to this show and other shows. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. See you later. Bye.